I don't know any other way to talk about all this stuff without just being very honest. I am not trying to be salacious. I am not trying to shock or scare anybody. I'm just trying to speak very straight, very, very forthright, as Paul did. It's the best I can do. Okay, I'm just doing the best I can do. I hate talking about this stuff. I do not know why God has asked me to do this and to stand on the front lines against pornography. I really don't understand it. But I'm just doing what he's asked me to do. I show up and I do what he asked me to do. So please just give me some grace tonight as I try and work our way through this. Normally I like having notes printed out on paper because I hate these stupid phones. So please bear with me tonight as I just read the notes off of my phone. I need to just sort of rip the Band-Aid off, okay? I just gotta rip it off. And then we'll dissect everything, okay? I need to give you the current state of affairs of pornography, okay? In the 1950s, if you wanted to see porn, you had to have a Playboy magazine, but they were pretty hard to come by. The 1970s rolled around. Now, if you were 21, you could drive to what's called a nudie theater, buy a ticket, and sit there with other people watching what are now NC-17 rated movies on Netflix. Obviously, you know, pornography and masturbation go hand in hand, but in public theaters, that was pretty much a no-no. The 1980s rolled around. Now, if you were a kid, you could get your hands on pornography by biking to a gas station and stealing a dirty magazine off the racks, or you could steal your parents' credit card and order a VHS tape from a catalog, if you guys remember what those are. Some of you don't even know what a VHS tape is. Interesting side note, 1980s, Billy Graham was burning up the countryside with the gospel. It was also the same decade that you could get pornography on a video in the comfort of your own home and nobody would know. I mean, are we a more Christian nation now than we were in the 80s? Of course not. Now, would we be worse off had Billy Graham not been burning up the countryside? Probably. We couldn't know that for sure. What he did was unbelievable, unprecedented, and will probably never be done again. And I miss him terribly. I just think that's an interesting... I want you to keep that in the back of your mind to understand how the devil met Billy Graham's revivals in the 80s with technology. You guys remember Betamax? Some of you old folks, Betamax and VHS were in competition for the home movie format. Do you know why Betamax died? They refused to allow pornography on their format. Just refused. Now there's no Betamax, even though it was a better format and quality and sound all around. 1990s rolled around. Suddenly a guy named Tim Berners-Lee invents the World Wide Web, and now you could just sit at the computer and type in boobs and sex, and all kinds of crazy pictures would come up very slowly on the dial-up speed that we had back then. But now here we are today, 21st century. Everybody has high-speed internet, and you guys all have these little devices in your pockets called smartphones that you can pull out and speak to an artificial intelligence and have it pull a thought from the satellites and display it in front of your face in a couple of seconds. Completely free, unfettered, 24/7 access to hardcore pornography is in the pockets of every child and adult in America. What could possibly go wrong, right? The average age of exposure to pornography today is 8 years old. Some of you already know that because that's about how old you were when somebody first showed you. I was 11. In 1992, on my paper route, I'd have no memories as an 11-year-old. I probably liked the Ninja Turtles, and I loved the Minnesota Vikings. I probably was rooting for Chris Carter and Wade Wilson. And I walk into my paper route, and I saw something colorful in the gutter. I can take you to the exact street and the exact gutter that I found. An adult VHS cover of two women having sex. And every time I tell this story, a brief moment, I can feel and smell exactly what I felt and smelled as an 11-year-old in that one moment. And every worst memory of my childhood, I had a privileged, amazing childhood with my parents, every worst memory stems from that single moment, that mental molestation that I did not consent to. I never got addicted like a lot of my friends. It never affected my marriage like it did for a lot of my friends. It has haunted every waking moment of my life. To this day, there is not a day that goes by I don't want it in some small way. I just think that's interesting. The average age today of exposure is 8 years old. The most avid viewers and consumers of pornography are 12 to 17-year-olds. They watch more porn than any other group per capita, any other people group. But do you know what some of the most popular forms of pornography are today by keyword? I'll just grab a few from the list. Teen, rape, incest. Those are actual categories of porn on free porn websites. In fact, a recent study of today's porn showed that 88% of it features violence against women. And the 95% of the time when a woman was struck or abused during a sex act, because it's always the woman that's abused in porn, she pretended to enjoy it or had no response at all. So the question then becomes, what happens to girls growing up in a society around boys that are watching that kind of porn every day for 10 years, but no one told them it was wrong? We're finding out right now. We're all wondering, why does it seem like there's so much sexual violence and abuse happening right now? More than we remember. Some people are saying, oh, well, it's just more people are talking about it. Well, it's just happening a lot more. We're breeding children on hardcore pornography. Nobody wants to talk about that. Just one of the popular tube websites, because of course no one pays for porn anymore unless you've really got a problem. Just one of the popular tube websites. There's plenty. And by the way, I will name them. Okay? I will name evil. Evil has a name, and I will speak that name. Pornhub, RedTube, YouPorn. Most of these sites owned by one company called MindGeek that distribute about 85% of the pornography on planet Earth. They own the professional sites, and they own the free sites that are siphoning content and pirating it from their professional sites. They are cannibalizing themselves. Just one of those sites, Pornhub, let's just go with Pornhub, streams about 6,000 videos per second. 6,000, 12,000, 18,000, 24,000, 30,000. Do the math on how many videos just during my lecture. In the last 2 years, all of humanity has consumed 1 million years worth of pornography on just Pornhub.com. 1 million years over the course of 2 years on just one website. So if you put all the websites together, they're like 5 million years, 10 million years. And is there any more influential force on the face of the earth than hardcore pornography? And what does that say about us? And where does that take us in the next 5 years, 10 years? And where does it all come from? You ever wonder? All this free stuff, where in the world is it all coming from? I mean, is everyone on earth recording themselves having sex and uploading it and getting no money? Do girls just wake up at 18 like craving sex, violent sex, and then record it and put it online for the whole world to see, even though no one gives them any money or knows their name or sometimes even sees their face? I've never met a girl like that. About half of it, as far as we can tell, is pirated from the professional websites, where the average career of an adult film actress today will last about 6 months before her body and mind can no longer withstand the punishment of what she's barely being paid to do. See, what most people don't know is porn actresses and porn stars, they're given a stipend per sex act. They're not reimbursed for their hair, their makeup, their wardrobe, their travel, their food, or their lodging. In the last 3 months, 5 very high-profile porn stars have killed themselves. Those numbers, by the way, I get from the porn producers themselves. Now I have to tell you where the rest of it comes from. And maybe we'll start taking it a little more seriously then, yeah? There's 3 major pipelines for free porn, as far as I can tell, outside of the small amount of people that just record themselves and put it online for their own enjoyment. Revenge porn. 2 consenting adults agree to have sex, record it for their own enjoyment, and then upload it. And someone uploads it to Pornhub to get revenge on the other person. There are so many of those videos now floating around that there are entire websites devoted just to uploading revenge porn, even though it's completely illegal. As long as the servers are hosted somewhere in the Netherlands, you know, doesn't matter. Pedophiles. All around the world today, there are thousands of men posing online as sexy teenage girls on Instagram and Facebook and convincing teenage boys that they're real girls, and then getting those boys to send them naked videos of themselves masturbating. And if the boys look 18 or don't show their face, those videos go up on Pornhub. That's so common, it's likely happened to almost every boy in every school in America. Someone's approached them on Facebook or Instagram and asked, and many oblige. In fact, 7 men were arrested just a couple of months ago, because over the last 10 years, they've convinced 2,300 boys to do this. Seven men, 2,300 boys. Those are just the ones that we caught. What about the final pipeline? Well, here in America, the land of the free, the home of the brave, where slavery has been outlawed for hundreds of years, we spend more money buying underage girls and boys for sex in something called human trafficking, sex slavery, than we spend on sports. Slavery brings in more money today than it ever has in all of human history. There is one child sold every minute on American soil. The average age she's sold is 12, and once her pimp has sufficiently broken her body, and see what the pimps do, they look for girls that have no dads, runaways, girls on the street. They go to the mall looking for a girl that seems alone, isolated. They befriend her. Then they become her boyfriend. They start having sex with this girl, and he's like the nicest guy she's ever met, buying her all this nice stuff. Then one day he hits her, but she's so manipulated by him that she kind of brushes it off. And then one day he says, "Baby, I got my buddies coming over. I'll give you $500 if you give them both a blowjob." She doesn't want to do it, but she obliges because she really loves this guy. And she finds out he's got seven more girlfriends just like her. And she ends up in a house with all of them where they all vie for his affection and attention. And he farms them out, 20 to 30 men every day for one girl. Until she dies at the age of 32, which is the average lifespan for a victim of human trafficking, until they succumb to disease or drugs or suicide. I get my numbers primarily from the FBI, just in case you're wondering. Now, we met some of these girls and boys. I met some of them, the few we can even find to rescue. Do you know what we discovered? They all had the same story. Every day, whatever big city, small town, truck stop, or school, where they were sold for sex, their pimps and the cowards that bought them brought phones and digital cameras and made pornography out of them, and then uploaded those videos to Pornhub and RedTube and made money off the ad revenue by signing up for a premium ad sharing account, just like you can do on YouTube. Meaning any guy alive today that has struggled watching pornography on a regular basis has seen videos of underage sex trafficking victims on these free websites, and he didn't even know it. But he gave money to her abuser, and he enjoyed himself in the process, even if he felt bad. They make their girls watch pornography to groom them so that they know what to do when they're bought. They even check that little box before they upload a video. The pimps, they check a little box that says, "I agree, every performer was 18 and gave their consent," right? Just how we all agreed that we were 21 to get into the website, even if we weren't. A good pimp can make $1,000 an hour off of one girl. They got money for lights and sets and cameras. In fact, often they'll just set a little camera up in the corner of the room where she's in for the day. They can just stream that 24/7 for a fee. And girls, you know, they're so complicated to boys today, right? They take so much work. Relationships take so much work. Oh, God forbid we have to ever work for something in our lives. And society is speaking out of both sides of his mouth to boys, right? Girls want a guy that's nice, and, you know, looks aren't that important. But when they turn on Instagram or YouTube or Twitter and look in their feed, all they're seeing is Justin Bieber and Zac Efron and the One Direction boys in their underwear behaving badly, and girls go nuts for it. So they're very confused as to what girls want. And finally, they just give up and say, you know, it's too much work. I'm just going to watch porn and play video games and live in my parents' basement. And it sounds so crazy. It sounds so funny. But you know what's actually happening in America? All over the country today, young boys are abandoning relationships permanently for porn and their hand. In fact, Japan has already shown us our future. A third of Japanese young people under 30 have admitted they've never had sex and have no intention of ever having sex, getting married, dating, or anything. And the numbers get worse from there. In the next 46 years, Japan is set to lose nearly one-third of its population because almost their entire generation has abandoned relationships and marriage on every conceivable level. They've shown us our future. You know, right now in Japan, you can buy a little holographic girlfriend. She sits in like this little tube by your bed, and she'll float down in the morning. She'll just appear, a little anime character. She'll talk to you. She'll flirt with you. She'll even sit down in this little holographic chair and she'll eat popcorn while you watch a movie together. She can even text you when you're gone. I miss you, baby. Come home soon. How's your day? That's a commercial. You can watch that commercial on YouTube, by the way. You can order it. And now we have sex dolls and sex robots. Virtual reality porn. We'll put pornography out of business. But these sex dolls, it's something else. They can already recognize your face, remember your favorite position, and fake an orgasm. Did you know that? You can custom design every inch of their body, every color. You want blue, red, green, tall, short. You want it to look like a child. You got it. And they're not building a lot of male sex robots. They're mostly females with perfect bodies that won't cry or say no or feel any pain. So what happens to girls then? Right? What happens to girls then? How do you get here, though? I mean, how do you go from pretty vanilla porn in the 70s to rape porn today? And where do you go after rape porn as a society? Do you think we're finally going to stop there? Graciously, there's a science behind all of this. We have hundreds of studies now from neurologists all over the world that have combined their data to find empirically one undeniable fact. Your brain actively watching pornography responds the exact same way as a brain high on crack cocaine. And I've seen the brain scans with mine own eyes. And we've handed the most lethal drug ever known to mankind into the pockets of every single child in America and asked them to grow up normal. And now we're seeing how difficult that's become for them. They are the most depressed, suicidal, anxious, depressed, unhealthy, miserable generation that has ever been. Little Tommy got his hands on some porn at 8. Maybe a brother or a friend showed him. He won't forget that porn as long as he lives. In fact, you're thinking of the first porn you saw right now. And when he goes through puberty, he'll go back to that image just because he's curious. But in that moment, his brain will do something it never did before. It will combine two chemicals, adrenaline and dopamine. Chemicals God designed. And it will trip them into the amygdala, the feel-good center of the brain. And all of a sudden, his little body starts shaking, but he's not cold. And he's aroused and he's high. For the first time. So he goes back the next day and the next day, all the while making sure no one ever catches him. Because even though no one told us porn was wrong, we were so terrified somebody would see. That's strange. Then one day the shakes stop, the erection goes away. His brain is now hooked and like a drug addict, it needs a stronger fix to keep getting him high. So he goes online to Pornhub and RedTube. He starts looking at some categories he's never heard of before, like extreme brutal gangbang, 18 and abused, or girls crying. Girls crying is an actual category of pornography. Millions of videos of girls sobbing while someone does something to them. Well, how do you think those videos got made? Tommy never thought he'd be watching that stuff. In fact, he's deeply ashamed, but he can't stop. And he finally gets in bed with a real girl, only then to realize in that one terrible moment, girls don't like that kind of sex at all. And she runs screaming from the room, rape, assault. Is it any wonder we're seeing a rise in sexual assault? This is assuming he can even get an erection in that moment, because this, which controls his apparatus, has seen so much pornography, it might not even know he's in an erotic situation. Dr. Pavlov proved many years ago that the brain is plastic and can be rewired. He tried a little experiment with dogs. He'd ring a bell, feed him a treat. Ring a bell, feed him a treat. He did this for a while. Then one day he rang the bell but didn't feed them a treat. The dog's brain had become so accustomed to that sound combined with food that it sent messages to its mouth to salivate in preparation for the food. Tommy goes to the doctor and he says, "Doctor, look, I'm 18. I was trying to sex with my girlfriend, but I couldn't get an erection. I think I have erectile dysfunction." The doctor says, "That's weird because you're really young. Do you ever watch any porn?" "Well, yeah, like every day." "Can you get an erection then?" "I mean, I masturbate every day, so yeah, I guess so." "Okay, that's not erectile dysfunction. I don't really have a pill for that, Tommy. That's unusual. You know, 1 in 3 men today under 40 have erectile dysfunction with a woman, but not when they're watching porn. 1 in 3. that didn't even exist as a condition 20 years ago. Meaning we've invented a new sexual dysfunction that's rising so quickly it will consume nearly every single boy that thinks he can have a recreational relationship with pornography. And it can often affect girls the same way, but of course their bodies are different. Now Tommy has one option left to get what he needs, what he's been watching, what his girlfriend would give him. He's got to buy a girl. So he goes online to Backpage, to the adult services section. He starts looking around for a call girl. And he sees an ad posted by a 15-year-old girl looking for a good time. His heart starts pounding. And he sends a text to the message on there. Is this for real? And he gets a message back. Yeah, baby, it's for real. When do you want to meet? He says, you're really 15? Yeah, baby, don't worry about it. It's okay. You're not a cop, right? No, baby, I'm not a cop. It's okay. You can trust me. And they agree to meet at a motel where he pays her to let him do the things his girlfriend won't. And then she gives all that money to her pimp. In fact, often, he'll bring his phone in, and he'll show her his favorite Pornhub video, and he'll ask her how much she charges for that. I know these stories because up in Minneapolis, the cops that make these arrests are my friends, and one is a radical Christ follower. Porn is turning a generation of boys into monsters that have to buy a girl to get what they want. This is where we are today. What have Christians been doing, though? Where have Christians been? That's my question. Where have we been? We can't talk about sex. Hollywood talks a lot about sex. Pornography talks a lot about sex. Church can't talk about sex. All the way back in the garden, something very interesting happened. God made Adam, and Adam named all these animals, but then God noticed he was still alone. Almost like God was surprised. Put Adam to sleep, and he took a rib from Adam's body so he would always know something. He paid a cost, a price, something was taken from him to make woman. He woke Adam up, and there was Eve. What do you think was the first thing Adam did with Eve? You think he was like, wow, you're beautiful. My name's Adam. This is the garden. This is God. Let me show you around. Come on. They had sex. That's probably all they did. Maybe stopping occasionally to eat. Oh, it's all they did in the presence of God. It's all they did. It is the greatest gift he ever gave us. And then the devil came and he lied to Eve. And she ate the fruit. And something very interesting happened. She didn't die. She gave the fruit to Adam, and they looked down at their bodies, and they're like, oh my gosh, we're naked. Our private parts are showing. And they hid, and they tried to cover them. And they said, God was walking through the garden. Where are you, guys? Where are you? Lord, we're hiding. Why are you hiding? Because we were naked. Oh, who told you you were naked? The first evil thought that ever entered our mind was shame. Isn't that interesting? It is the most powerful weapon that the devil has against Christians, is shame. And he's been waiting for the moment that he could insert a dragon of shame into the pockets of every child and person in America, because he knew Christians don't have the guts to talk about sex. And Hollywood and pornography have now hijacked it and polluted it to something disgusting and violent and evil and wicked. Where have we been? All through history, Christians have been the one with the finger in the dam, staving off the end of the world. Wherever Christianity was spread, peace arrived. War was replaced by peace. Hate was replaced by love. Everywhere we've gone, I know a lot of muddle-headed Christians think, well, you know, this is a lot like Rome. Yes. But there was one big difference in Rome. Christians were being killed, persecuted, torn from their homes. We're not, that's not happening here, is it? Not in America. We're implicitly involved in the same activity. In fact, George Barna, the leading statistician on the evangelical church in America, released a devastating report on pornography in the church. We watch just as much porn as everybody else, and we get divorced as much as everybody else. But we go to church. Oh, not my kids. No, my kids are good kids. They don't watch that stuff. They go to church. You have bought a lie, and we have lost the argument. But sometimes you talk about sex. Gay marriage. We're going to die on the hill of gay marriage. It's not natural. We're going to go out and picket it. We're going to vote. Do you know an overwhelming majority of people living an openly homosexual, transgender lifestyle were sexually abused as children? Little 9-year-old boy, 10-year-old boy, is being molested regularly by a neighbor, another male, an older male. And see, this is what's strange. The 10-year-old boys don't know this, but their little body, their little penis, when it's stimulated, will respond the way a stimulated penis will, even if they're not enjoying it. And what do you think happens when a 10-year-old boy has an orgasm at the hands of a 15-year-old boy? And that happens over and over again. What do you think he's going to assume about himself? Well, I must be gay. You got a 9-year-old boy exposed to hardcore pornography. He's been watching erect penises ejaculate for years and years. And by the time he's 15 or 16, he's not really sure what he's attracted to. You got a little girl that's being regularly abused and molested by an older boy in the neighborhood. Can you blame her when she's 16 or 17 if she just decides she never wants to see a penis ever again? Or decides maybe she wants one herself? This is the most sexually confused generation we've ever seen. We have never, ever talked about any other gender than male and female. It's not LGBT anymore, by the way. It's LGBTQIA+, depending on who you ask. Bisexual, by the way, is now not an allowed term in that community. It's bi plus. Because what if you're not attracted to male or female? What if you want something in between? Bisexual is now an offensive term because it assumes you're only attracted to men or women. We have lost the argument. And when you stand up and you die on the hill of gay marriage, you are telling, without even them knowing it, without you knowing it, you are telling that gay man or woman, transgendered person, that you have no idea what they've been through. They think it's a choice. They think it's they were born that way. You think it's a choice. I'm arguing that it's actually neither. It's never been. It is purely a product of your upbringing as a child. The rates of domestic and physical abuse and sexual abuse in openly homosexual relationships are 2, 3, and 4 times the rate of heterosexual couples. See, abuse is almost hereditary. Abusers abuse. I asked a woman in our community, our LGBT community, very sweet woman, wonderfully, wonderfully sweet woman. I asked her that question in an email. I said, can you explain this to me and what's your community doing about it? And she had no answer. Of course, they don't have an answer. They need Jesus. And if you go back to the adulterous woman, remember they brought the woman out, the Pharisees in front of Jesus, they threw her down. They said, we caught her in the very act of adultery. It's very likely she was naked, by the way. They probably didn't have the decency to let her get dressed. Jesus looked down in the sand, probably to savor the embarrassment she was already feeling and the shame. And he began writing in the sand. And then he looked at them and he said, you know, that he was without sin cast the first stone. They dropped the stones. He walked away. He looks at the woman and says, where are your accusers? She said, Lord, they're gone. He says, well, I don't accuse you either. Now go and sin no more. Don't you think that if the Pharisees had brought out a gay man caught in the very act of homosexuality and done the same thing and throw him down, the Bible says we should, the word says we should stone him, that the interaction would have gone the exact same way? Guys, you've lost the argument. We don't talk about sex at all. We don't ask each other in our marriages, how's your sex life? In the most brutal age of sexual anarchy, where a husband can have 3 or 4 orgasms a day if he wants to on his own. We didn't even ask each other, is it good? Is it strong? Are you protecting it? We just hide it, and then we find that a pastor's watching porn, we fire him. Why is pornography such an attraction? You ever wonder that? Why is it such an attraction? You know, it's based on the beauty of the human body, which is God's most precious creation, and that's what the devil loves to do. He loves to take something that's beautiful and twist it. We have such an attraction to it. It's never about the sex. And for most ladies, by the way, most of your husbands in this room were exposed as children just like me. You have no idea what we've been asked to do. No other generation of men have been asked to do what we've been asked to do and put up with what we've been asked to put up with. None of us. None of us. The devil cannot create anything. He can only corrupt. He can only take what God has made and twist it. He cannot create anything. And that's what he does. He takes the beautiful things. Our bodies are so beautiful to God. And he twists them. He corrupts them. We were born naked. I think that's interesting. We're born naked. That's how God wanted it originally. You know, there's a whole book in the Bible about sex. You ever read it? Oh, we don't read that book in our house. There's a whole book in the Bible. I've met some Christians, and I was, buddy, you know, I don't think it's about sex. I think really it's just an allegory for God's love for man. I'm sorry. Am I the woman in the analogy then? Is God describing my breasts? Am I the woman in this analogy? I don't want that. It's a beautiful book. Make it a part. If you're a Christian, make it a part of your quiet time. It is a beautiful book to see how a man, a husband, should love his wife and desire his wife and fantasize about his wife. I tell people all the time, I'm not heterosexual or homosexual or pan-A, bi-intersexual. I'm Gretchen sexual now. I'm not literally attracted to half the population. It's just her. I have made Gretchen the sexual forefront of my imagination. Against all odds, I'm Gretchen sexual now. You know what's interesting to me? 150 years ago, what was a 15-year-old doing right now? They were out in the fields working all day long. In fact, that's how it really was for about, I don't know, all of human history. Out in the fields with their dad, around their dad all day, working. They didn't start their morning with Mountain Dew Kickstart and Hot Takis. They ate real food that they grew or killed or skinned or hatched or feathered. Defeathered, excuse me. They worked all day, had a big dinner with their family. Then they slept about 12 hours at night because they were just exhausted. I do a poll when I go to schools. How are you guys sleeping on a scale of 1 to 10, I ask them. And they're all like, ugh, I don't know, 2 hours a night. Well, you're going to die at 50. Cell phones burn their retinas. The blue screens on phones burn your retinas. These kids are spending 6 hours a day burning their retinas. They're getting a new condition called phone hunchback. And they're sleeping 2 hours a night. The devil is relentlessly attacking the creation of God and the temple of God, if you're a believer, in a way he never has in all of human history. We are, in total, the fattest, sickest, most addicted, most depressed, most suicidal generation that has ever walked the face of the earth. And we are, if you know Jesus Christ, you are the temple of God now. And he is attacking the temple in a way he never has. And attacking the precious creation of God in a way that he never has. But 150 years ago, boys were out working with their dads all day. They weren't sneaking away to the outhouse 5 times a day to masturbate. And at 15, they would take a 2-day journey into the nearest town to buy some salt. And they saw this pretty girl, and they were like, Dad, who's that? He's like, oh, I know her dad. I helped build his house. And then a year later, he married that girl at 16. You guys, think about this. Is God cruel? No. So why put a boy through puberty at 13 or 14 and make him burn with that puberty and demand he be absent till he's 30 and married? Do you know the mother of Jesus, Mary, God put a baby inside of Mary's body when she was 15 years old? A girl's body is ready for a baby at a very young age. I am not advocating we go back to that, okay? Especially if this is being recorded. But my gosh, you guys have no idea what we are asking our kids to go through. It sounds crazy. I go into schools and say, don't have sex till you're married. I mean, I say it in a very eloquent, amazing, awesome way. But they're like, are you literally saying I can't masturbate or do anything until I'm 30? I'm like, yeah, it sounds nuts, doesn't it? You have been betrayed. They have been betrayed. They're sleeping around with 5 or 6 people. You know, half of the country, half of adults in America will have an STD at some point in their life. And the most viral STD on the face of the earth, HPV, has no cure and is impervious to condoms and can be contracted from skin-to-skin contact and contact with body fluids. That's what they were doing at 15, 16 years old. Oh, God, I have three boys. I pray to God they can be married by the time they're 18. I probably never would have even seen porn. I met the girl I would marry when I was 17. I never would have sought it out on my own had I not been exposed at 11. I'm getting ahead of myself. Masturbation. We got to talk about it. Why isn't it in the Bible? Something every man in this room has struggled with, and many of you women. Why isn't it in the Bible? There is no mention. Okay, there's one verse about a guy that spilled his seed on the ground to deny his baby a wife, and God killed him for it. It was because he was being cruel, not because he spilled his seed on the ground. FYI. There is no mention. I have a theory. I don't even think it was a thing until the 20th century. I think we invented masturbation as a way to deal with the overwhelming inundation of sex in our lives and to deal with the sexual stress put upon us. Even in the 50s, C.S. Lewis was talking about sex everywhere. The 50s! I think we invented it just to help us deal with the stress. Here's the problem with masturbation. It's not the orgasm, okay? The problem with masturbation is you cannot do it without thinking about somebody that does not belong to you. That we know is wrong. That we know is wrong. But let me ask a hypothetical question here, and just bear with me for a second, okay? The 2017, sexual anarchy, porn everywhere, as ubiquitous as the air we breathe. You have a husband and wife trying to love God deeply in love, and the wife, she's sick for 9 months while they're pregnant. They can't have sex. Or she's sick with something else. They can't have sex for months on end. I'm sorry. I am not going to be the guy that looks that guy in the end and says, just wait for a wet dream, bro. If between a man and a woman, they agree that for a period of illness, he can masturbate while fantasizing about his wife, I can't even honestly tell you whether or not that's wrong. This is how far we have fallen. We are so bent. We are inventing new ways to relieve the unmitigated sexual, unrelenting sexual stress in our lives. You guys can have a conversation amongst yourselves, okay? I'm not saying I really have an opinion one way or another. I'm just saying it's worth entertaining. In this day and age, we are so broken. I fantasize about Gretchen all the time. A kid asked me today at school. He comes up, he goes, what's your favorite part about being married? I said, I put my hand on his shoulder. I said, sex is my favorite part. Sex is my favorite part. And I love having kids. I mean, you know, sex is my favorite part. There's a lot of great things, but sex is the best part. He just laughed. He didn't know what to say. You're going to have that conversation amongst yourselves. I just think it's interesting that masturbation is not in the Bible. That's all I'm saying. Did God forget? Did he leave something out? Just have a conversation. Just have a conversation. Also, I recognize past sexual damage can even make the thought of that very dangerous. Okay? I deal with sexually damaged people all the time. I work with boys that are struggling with addiction to pornography, masturbation. I get some guys who are like, I can never open that door again. You just need to have conversations, safe conversations between a man and a wife. If you love God, just be willing to have those conversations. We are all damaged. I am sexually damaged. My wife is sexually damaged. God is bigger than those things. We are asking young men to live with basically a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week erection. That's what we're asking them to do. Just understand that. Just understand that and give a little bit of grace to know that no other generation of boys was asked to deal with this. None. Ever. We are in a new, unprecedented age, but the Bible has the answers. It will always have the answers. Can God heal sexual damage? Absolutely. Absolutely. But we built convictions. This is very important. We built convictions on sexuality based on fear and not love. Based on fear and not love. And this is very important to understand. I've noticed a lot of Christians that are joining the fight against trafficking, pornography, all these things. And many of them come from a sex-addicted past, sexually damaged past, abusive past. They are finding their identity not in their worth in Christ, but in their baggage, their damage, what they think they know, the books they've read, the blogs they've read, their own opinions. And we're building. We need to be very careful that we're not building our sexual convictions, because the devil comes in there too. We come to know Christ. He's still there trying to contort our convictions now in Christ. And I've seen it happen to lots of Christians. They're building up false convictions about sex, not from the Bible, but from blogs and books they read, and just their opinions or their past or their damage. That is not how we build convictions. I am now a son of God. Period. That's where my identity ends. Everything else is just gifts he's given me. Eccentricities, personality traits that I should love about myself because he made me. But we must be very, very careful to understand God can heal our damage, but we must find our identity in him. My wife is one of the best examples of this of any woman I've ever met. She just completely embraced her identity in Christ, not her sexual brokenness or her damage. I met very few women like my wife that have come out of a sexually damaged past and just said, I'm a daughter of the King, and that's just it. I'm just moving on. I know it's hard to do. But we need to build our convictions on sex out of love and not fear. Let's talk about terminology. I'm closing up. I'm going to do a song and then we'll talk. Can we stop using the word purity, at least in the context of sex? Let me tell you something. I am not any less pure for masturbating or watching pornography. The last 30 years, we've been just hounding boys. Be pure. Don't watch porn. You got to be pure. I am pure. I'm a believer. I have Jesus Christ. I have the Holy Spirit. I am pure. No amount of masturbating and porn watching removes my purity or tints my glory. It does not honor God. But we have ruined, Christians have ruined the word purity. Every time I hear that word, I'm like, oof, oof. It's a beautiful word. In this context, it does not belong in this context anymore, okay? It does not belong in this context anymore, in my opinion. Lust. Lust is not even a bad, I lust after my wife. I have a lust for life. That's not necessarily a bad word. This is not, pornography is not about lust. There's a piece of that in there, otherwise we wouldn't watch it. But this is not a lust issue. This is a brain issue. This is a broken sex issue. This is a sexual integrity issue. This is not a lust issue. And we put purity and lust in this context. We built this little Bible study. I lived through all that stuff. It never helped anybody. It just made us feel so ashamed. Why can't I be pure? Oh, why do I lust so much? It was awful. Let's be careful with those words. I think there's a more accurate word for pornography we should start using. Here's the dictionary definition of pornography. A contagious disease that spreads rapidly and kills, I'm sorry, that's the plague. This is pornography. Printed or visual material containing the explicit description of display or display of sexual organs or activity intended to stimulate erotic rather than aesthetic or emotional feelings. Here's the plague description. A contagious disease that spreads quickly and kills many people. Which do you think is a more accurate description of pornography? I think we should start calling it the plague. I think altogether the church should rise up and stop using the word pornography, and we should start using the word the plague as a much more accurate description of what this is. Don't you agree? Just think about it. I'm not going to make rules for your church. Just think about it. I am not anti-porn. No one cares what you're against. You're not anti-abortion. You are pro-choice. I am pro-human. I'm not anti-porn. I'm pro-human. Porn is anti-men, women, and children. We have all the studies now to prove it. So I am pro-human. Please don't say anti-porn if you think about it. But it's not wrong. No one's going to, you know, whip you if you say it. But can we just get our terminology as Christians? Can we kind of get on the same page here? Let's say pro-human. I'm just for humans. I'm for people. You cannot feed a man whose mouth is sewn shut. The gospel is everything. Pornography cannot replace the gospel as our new mission. The gospel is everything. Jesus is everything. But you cannot feed a man whose mouth is sewn shut. And pornography is sewing the heart shut of an entire generation. They are so sexually broken and damaged. You've got to like deal with that. You got to deal with all that before you can just give them the gospel. We've got to deal with that, have those conversations. They can often be the same conversation. Hey, can we bring hugs back? What was this? Who invented the side hug thing? Guys should hug girls from the side. Who was that guy? I'd like to talk to that guy. Do you know what that's done? It has taught our Christian daughters that their breasts are dirty and that we're afraid of touching their breasts. I shared this at a conference. I had 5 girls come up afterwards and ask me for hugs. When someone safe touches you, a little drop of oxytocin hits your brain. It makes you feel good. God put that there for a reason. Jesus touched people. A gal came to our church a couple years ago. She was a cheerleader for a professional team. And I heard her story later on through a friend. She said, the first time I came to the Rock, I met Jeremy, and he introduced me to his wife, as I am prone to do. And when I left that night, Jeremy gave me a hug goodbye. Girls know when they're being like hugged seductively and when they're just being hugged like a dad. She said, I went out to my car that night and I sobbed because it was the first time in my life any man had touched me in a non-sexual way. 2 other girls came up to her and said, well, I had the same experience at the Rock. I don't even remember that happening. Apparently it happened. Apparently I hugged her. I just think that's very powerful. No, in the age of sexual anarchy, we have repelled from each other. Oh, too much sex. I don't want to get an erection from hugging a girl. Come on. Guys, we have ruined hugs. You know, Jesus told us to greet each other with a kiss. He did not specify it with his man or a woman. I'm not saying we should go back to that either. But can we please just like hug each other? Can we just hug each other? I like hugs. There will never be a revival in the church if we do not root pornography out of the pews of our church. It will never happen. If we do not root it out of our homes. Pull your phones out. Everybody take your phones out. We're going to do a little exercise. Because now you're wondering, well, what do I do? How do I get it out of my home? It does not belong in our home. I'm going to help you get it out of your home. Okay? Now you have no excuse. I'm going to help you get it out. You know, I blocked Google from my house. You cannot get to Google in my house. If my son has a question about anything in life, he comes to Dad. I'm Google. Open up your text message app, and I want you to send a new text message to this number, 313131. 313131. Okay? In the body of that text message, I want you to type all one word, lowercase, the spokesman, THESPOKESMAN, the spokesman, all one word, that's me. And hit send. You should get instantly back a little note from me with a couple of links and more to come. I'm going to send you all in the next couple of days the links to what I believe are the best filters and apps to get pornography out of your home and off your children's phones. You would not live in your home if you knew snakes were reproducing in your walls, right? You would hire an exterminator to come in and remove them all. You would even probably move your family to some sort of inn, town and suites for a couple of days, right? Then you would come back, inspect where this person had worked to make sure there were no eggs left before you moved your family back in. Listen, I would rather live with snakes in my house than knowing pornography is being funneled into my home and I've done nothing about it. It does not belong in our home. It is emancipation by eradication. We cannot have access to it. Saying no is not enough. It does not belong on your phone. It does not belong on your tablets, on your PlayStation, on your Xbox, on your Netflix, on your DirecTV, on your Comcast, anywhere. Every single place where the internet can come into your house must be eradicated. All Xboxes and PlayStations and Nintendos have parental controls. I locked them all down. All my sons can do is play games without a password. That's it. I'm going to send you technology on your phone, and it's going to be on your phone. This is like 99% open rate. I know once I hit send that you will see what I send you with instructions on how to block it from your Wi-Fi router and how to get it off your phones and off your devices. I'm going to send you 3 links. It takes way too long, and I don't have enough time tonight to go through all of those things, but I'm going to send that to you. It's very easy to set up. Most of them are free or very cheap. And even if you don't have a problem with it, maybe just sign up anyway and give money to an organization that's actually trying to do something to stop this, yeah? That'd be a nice thing. I will come to your, I'm here at your church. I will come to any school. I will go anywhere that I can to talk about this. If you're hurting, if you're struggling, you need to tell somebody. And if someone tells you, I'm struggling with pornography, put your hand on their shoulder and say, I'm sorry. I love you. I'm proud of you for letting me know. Let's do something about it. If you shame that person, they will never tell anyone ever again. And you will push them deeper down than they ever were before. Lastly, I want to define love. Then I'm going to play a song. Then we'll talk. Love is three things. Let's get on the same page here. 1 Corinthians tells us what love looks like, how it acts. But that doesn't make any sense to the unbelieving world. Patient, kind, doesn't keep a record of wrongs. What? Love is three things. It's a lifetime commitment. It's forever. I love my sons forever. I'll never give them up for adoption if we have irreconcilable differences, right? I love my parents forever. Some people have bad parents. I know that. I spend a lot of time trying to fix those kids. I have great parents. I will never emancipate myself from them if we have irreconcilable differences. And I will never leave my wife. You might be thinking, but Jeremy, that's romantic love. You can't see the future. Well, I know I'll never rob a bank no matter how broke I get. I know I'll never punch an old lady in the face no matter how angry I get. No one questions that ration. And I will never leave my wife. By the way, I did make a promise at a wedding in front of witnesses by giving a sacred vow that I would never leave my wife. And if my sons can't even trust me to keep the promise I made to their mother, who I'm regularly sleeping with, how in the world could these boys not trust me to eventually fall out of love with them someday as well? That's why divorce is so painful for children. Because it teaches us the first great lies about love, that love is temporary and has conditions. Number two, love is a choice. Gretchen actually chose to be with this for the rest of her life. I am as surprised as anybody. I did not blackmail her. She chose me. I chose her. In that choice, love can now blossom and grow. It cannot grow in a vacuum. You choose to love someone based on all available evidence. If there is force, pressure, deception, coercion in the relationship, there cannot be love. You must be free to choose. That is your right. As a human, it's the essence of love, the choice. Number three, love is selfless. I change my son's poopy diapers every day, not because it's fun. And trust me, when the poop gets on your fingers because you're moving too fast or they're wiggling around, you will really reconsider, why am I doing this? For 8 years, I've been changing diapers every day for three boys. They're my babies. I'm their daddy. So I change their diapers. Then I teach them how to do it themselves. That's even worse. Teaching them is even worse. I try to put Gretchen's needs above my own. That doesn't mean she always gets what she wants, neither do I. That's not love. But at the end of the day, their lives now matter more than mine. I learned that definition from the Bible. See, the forever love of God chasing us, haunting us through time. The choice he gave us in the garden. Love did not exist between Adam, Eve, and God until he gave them the tree. If you want, you can go your own way. And the selfless love of Jesus on the cross. Love dies from the ones that it loves. That's a nice, easy definition we can all get our heads around. It's forever. It's a choice. It's selfless. And by the way, so is sex. When you have two people in bed in a committed, trusting marriage, each trying to out-selfless the other person sexually, giving each other choice in bed, believing that neither will ever leave the other, you now have a recipe for mind-blowing sex every time. Just like that. And you cannot get that kind of sex in anything but a committed marriage where you have the guts to stand up publicly and make a lifetime commitment. I mean, how could you stand in front of another person completely naked and unashamed without that assurance? Shame, fear, insecurity, those things ruin sex. They tend to go away in a committed, trusting marriage where you're embracing your identity in Christ and not who you were or what happened to you. I'm going to sing you guys a song. There's a word I've been using a lot. That word is bedlam. Bedlam. It's when everything and everyone just goes crazy. Total insanity. We are nearing that point. Maybe Jesus is just going to come back and I won't have to talk about this anymore. That would be nice. Get it out of me.
bit, love. Bit, love. Bit, love. So twisted, kissing anarchy. My apologies, my apologies. Burning effigies of your majesty. My apologies, my apologies.
Why don't we close in prayer? Father, thank you for truth. Thank you for making sex. Please help us, Lord. Please just help us to get this back and show us, Lord, how to do this, how to talk about it. Give us the wisdom in every situation to deal with a generation of such sexually damaged people. Never before has there been a generation of so many sexually damaged people. Give us the love, the patience, the grace, the kindness, Lord, that we treat them like you treated the Samaritan woman at the well, the adulterous woman, Lord. Mary Magdalene, all these, you know, it said, Lord, in Luke, it tells us, you were walking the cross, a great crowd followed, including many weeping women. You had such a way with people, Lord, damaged people, sexually damaged women. You loved them, you were kind to them, you talked to them. You broke all the social mores and norms of the day just to love them. And we just want to be like you. Help us, Lord, to be like you. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you guys very much. God bless you.